Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
And welcome and good morning. Welcome to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kavikian.
And David and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We are here each Saturday morning to talk to you, answer your phone calls, answer your questions, probably hopefully entertain you a little bit, and fill you in on some important issues with respect to estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, estate administration, beneficiary designations, advanced directives, all those good things related to stuff that you think about, you have questions about. We'd love to hear from you this morning here at Magic 590. You can be our first caller by picking up the phone and dialing us here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Hey, welcome. Good morning, Dave.
It is a good morning,
David,
isn't it, Harry?
Dave is in a
let's
very
go.
Good
he's
mood.
Glowing like
why,
he just became
are,
pregnant. Like,
why
look at that
glowing?
Glow.
Why are you glowing?
Well, I'm glowing because I have spent 41 years rooting for a team that, you know, is called the New York Mets. And
because your team doesn't
suck,
that's why.
I'm a little brother. They're a little brother in New York, you know, and they're off to a great start.
They are.
They are.
All's well. We're playing our rivals, the Phillies, yesterday. And for those that don't really know Mets history, like, nothing good really happens ever all that much.
Well, I remember enough history to remember this. I think Casey Stengel was the first coach, wasn't he?
And we lost, you know, a gazillion games. Anyway, the Mets threw a no-hitter yesterday, Harry, and Ben.
Yes.
It was combined. A couple people joined in, but I was very excited. Jackie was up at 11 o'clock, my daughter. She was very excited. This was a big moment in the Kabikian household.
Does she have a Mets hat like you?
No.
Were there tears shed?
No tear. No, it was no a tears. Second no hit, you know.
Okay.
Tears of joy. Tears
but it's
of
like
joy.
This is these are signs that things are happening this year. I mean, Ben, you know what I'm talking about.
I absolutely know what you're talking
about.
With
the Sox, sometimes they have a win, and it's like, wow, we usually don't do that.
Yeah, that's right. No, I agree. I agree. And they're playing terrible this year.
Sox not so good this year.
No, not so good.
Yeah, you know, like, Harry, if you want to go take a walk for the next 40 minutes, I can just go through the Mets history and...
Hey, listen, you know, seriously. Hey, all you Mets fans out here, let's hear from a Mets fan this morning with a question about estate planning.
Go they're on. Not... You know what it's they're like? Asleep right now.
You know what it's like
that's because they stayed up till 2 a.m. partying.
It's like if you live up here, right, and the winters sometimes are really bad, and then you get this gem of a day in the middle of the winter, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And then you're I was kind of skipping in. You didn't see me walking into the studio.
I was sitting here. I cannot see you from here. However, Ben can see you, and he says you were whirling in like a hurricane.
That's right. Absolutely. Harry had to move his chair because he was afraid you'd knock him over.
Well,
anyway.
I have to say, Dave, a momentous occasion happened last Saturday.
Last Saturday?
Yes. Harry Miller sat right where you're sitting.
Oh, no way.
That is the first time that's ever happened.
I did.
He sat there because he thought Jay Marie wasn't coming in.
Oh.
I sat in your chair so I could see Ben.
Oh. That's right.
Okay, because where I'm sitting, I can see you, but I can see Ben's hand.
Yeah, that's
I
it.
I can see Ben's hand.
So if people don't...
Jay Marie, I thought Jay Marie was calling in from remotely, and then...
She showed up.
All of a sudden, she showed up, so... Oh, it's okay.
So if you're not, you know, obviously you're listening, we sit in like a triangle formation, and Harry is in what they call the A chair, what I call the A chair. I'm in the B chair, right? So you're saying Harry was in the B chair.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice to see him, because I can't see him here. I could see his jacket if I look through the thing.
Ben
that's about it.
Ben has about four monitors here his keyboard.
I've never sat there. I only sit here.
I know.
Yeah.
And so we were back to normal this morning. I set up an extra chair for Harry because I know how much he likes to put his stuff down.
Yeah.
You know.
Very cool. Well, how was last week's show? I was at Disney World.
Really?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was very interesting.
Okay. I'm not going there.
Well, no, we're not going to talk about politics with this, but how was it there?
It was packed.
Magic Kingdom. The Magic
Everything,
Kingdom.
All of it. And even though there were so many people from New York and New Jersey and up north and getting away... You would think it was a different decade because you didn't see a mask, anything. And I was, you know, this whole Disney, they may stay in business for a while, these guys. They know what they're doing.
You think so?
They make some money.
Probably been around for 50 years, or 60 years, or 80
and,
years.
You know, you go to a ride and it's like a 50-minute wait, 5-0, a 50-minute wait.
50.
For a ride that takes, you know, a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. And you do it gladly.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, it's only 50 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not an hour and a half wait. It's only 50 minutes. It's crazy. But it was great.
Did you have one of those turkey drumsticks I heard all about?
No. Was this a first trip for the family?
It was a first trip for my son, but my daughter's been there once before.
Okay.
We did it with my parents. It was nice. They were very happy to have both their kids and then their grandkids and stuff. It was nice.
It's a generational thing. Very nice.
Yeah. We don't really do those things, so it was great.
Cool.
Yeah. So we did that right before the pandemic.
Oh,
right. February of 2020, we went to Disney, and my wife and I, my son and daughter-in-law, my daughter and son-in-law all went. And we got back, and then the world shut down. So
it's really unbelievable there. They do a heck of a job there. I mean,
did you stay on campus?
Yeah.
Where'd you stay?
At the yacht club.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
My parents spared no expense. So thank you, Mom and Dad.
Thank you, Mom and Dad.
They're probably listening. Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Oh, yeah, the presidential suite.
No. Anyway, Harry.
Before we start, today, Ben and I were talking about this before you arrived. Early, I might say. And today's the last day of April.
That's amazing.
Last day of April.
Like it is.
One third of the year is over. Tomorrow is May 1st. May 1st, when I was a kid, used to be called May Day. And I'm old enough to remember, I had two older sisters. And May Day was like the girls in high school, they like all got dressed up in prom dresses and they did the maypole dance. They had a maypole with streamers that came down and they did the maypole. And there was a queen of the May. And she had a court. We used to get out to the town park at the bandstand, and I mean, they closed school in the afternoon. It was a big spring party. And then, sometime along, I think around the late 50s, you know, Nikita Khrushchev appropriated May Day and started parading out Soviet tanks and armored missiles and on May 1st. And I guess, as it turns out, they weren't as awesome equipment as we might have thought based on current. But May Day maybe evaporated, okay? May Day evaporated here as a spring fling party kind of thing.
And if I hear May Day, I think...
Going down.
May Day, May Day.
Going down.
Exactly.
Yeah. And all those maypoles are now tetherball poles.
They're tetherball
so that's what they are.
Or T-ball. You know, they hang the T-ball from it or something.
Oh, but how funny.
Now, then what happened is in the, I think around 70s, mid-70s, when I was still in law school, getting out of law school, the Bar Association or somebody resurrected this thing called Law Day on May 1st. Remember May 1st? I think it's still Law Day, isn't it?
I don't know.
Used to go... We ought to know. You're aware.
It depends.
And then we would go, like, we do, like, pro bono things. On Law Day, I think we would go up, like, the law school, do some, you know, like, free counseling or do some pro bono.
Good. I didn't realize that was, so it was always in April. It was late April every time.
It was May 1st. Yeah. May 1st was Law Day. It probably still is. I don't know.
Cool.
I'll look it up. All right? Anyway.
Very nice.
That's a brief history. Now, back to whatever I brutally interrupted you about.
No, it's very fascinating. I was taking out my calculator to figure out if we're talking about the 50s and you're in this school and you're in law school and this year, I was trying to calculate how old you are. That's all.
Oh, well.
All you have to do is ask him. He'll tell you. And it is Law Day tomorrow.
It is.
The 1st of May is Law Day.
Yeah,
Law Day.
There you go.
Very good. Happy Law Day, everybody.
Thank you. You think it's a Law Day cake?
Probably not. Mm-hmm. So, Harry, we had our week of webinars this past week, and, you know, we have consults and stuff like that, and there was a topic that kept coming up, and I emailed you about it, right, you know, yesterday,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was gifting. Now, gifting is, we could spend weeks talking about gifting, believe it or not, because there's so many different parts to it, but when it comes to, like, the, you know, the estate planning myths, or when it comes to confusion about the Medicaid rules,
right.
When it comes... confusion about taxes, it always revolves around gifts. Well, I thought I can gift this amount of money. Well, you could for tax purposes. You might not for Medicaid purposes. And it's it's quite complicated, and I thought we could maybe peel the onion back, and I expect us to get actually a bunch of callers because people are always calling the station about, you know, how much can I give my kids this year? And so that's protected from Medicaid, right? So why don't we start there, right? There's, and we won't start with taxes. We'll just start with Medicaid, right? Everyone knows there are look-back periods. You don't just wake up and qualify for Medicaid, right? There's planning that's involved. So let me start there.
You have to plan. You have to make transfers. When we talk about transfers, and in the Medicaid rules, they're called uncompensated transfers. You and I call them gifts, okay? Yeah. If your mother writes you a check for $1,000, that's an uncompensated transfer under the Medicaid rules, even though it's a lovely gift. We'd say thank you. You maybe even write a note.
Nobody writes notes these days.
They don't.
Very few people.
They don't write notes.
We should actually write. I was just talking to Jane Marie. Sorry to interrupt you, but about how we should really write notes to clients and follow up and say, hi, how are you? Thanks again for coming in, that kind of stuff. We don't do it. No one does notes.
Right.
Anyway.
People really appreciate that stuff.
I think
like
so.
Like if you send them a little note on their birthday.
Okay? Yeah.
Their anniversary or something like that.
Yeah. I can guarantee you, Harry, that I will get some texts from people I have not heard from in a while because they're going to say, hey, the Mets had a no-hitter. Congrats. Like I had something to do with it.
Who knows? Maybe they're a good luck charm. So, you can give away. Let's start with that. How much can you give away each year without reporting it to the IRS? Right now, this year, it's $16,000 per person. So, I could write David a check and Ben a check for $16,000 each sometime in 2022, and they don't have to report that gift to the IRS.
Well, you know, we're all here instead of sometime in 2022.
Yeah, pull that checkbook out right now. Let's go.
Let's do April 30th.
Come on, Dad.
I left my checkbook at home.
Of course you did.
We do take credit.
Like, remember Wimpy from Popeye?
Yeah.
We'll gladly pay you Tuesday for hamburger
today. That's right.
So we could you give away $16,000 and you don't have to report it to Uncle Sam and pay an estate, a gift tax on it. However, the $16,000 gift, if you apply for Medicaid within 5 years of making that gift, you have to tell the Medicaid Social Services Department about it. And even though it's not a taxable gift under the Internal Revenue Code, it is an uncompensated transfer under the Medicaid rules, which will create a penalty.
Right.
All right? So therein lies a difference. And I would wager to say that is probably one of the most frequently asked questions by families when we do a Medicaid application for somebody. Because one of the critical things we have to determine is how much money did mom give away in the last 5 years? Say, oh, well, no, I don't think so. Say, oh, well, yeah, you know. My brother, I think she gave him $25,000 for a down payment on a house.
Well, I get this. Well, she didn't give us any money, but she did buy me a car. Well, that's money.
Mm-hmm.
That counts.
That is a gift.
She did, you know, give the down payment for my home. That is a gift, guys. She did, you know, pay for my kid's schooling. These are all transfers, potentially. And it's all about who's asking, because when you're talking about taxes, right, it's Uncle Sam that's asking. And when we're talking about applying and qualifying for Medicaid, it's the Department of Social Service that's asking what the transfers were, and they have different rules.
And you know what? It wouldn't even matter if you wrote the $16,000 check to your church or your college or your favorite charity. It's an uncompensated transfer. It's not just gifts to kids. It's charitable gifts.
So to expand that to the outrageous fact pattern, if you have $200,000 and you need a nursing home and you meet with an attorney who says, well, it looks like we could save half the money because you didn't do any prior planning, but at least we could save that. And you say, well, you know what? I'm just going to give it to charity. I saw a St. Jude's Hospital commercial. It looks like a great place. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give them $200,000. The next day, you do not qualify for Medicaid, and now you don't have $200,000.
They have created a long penalty period for eligibility.
And it's not that Medicaid says, well, you know, we don't like nice people that want to donate money. It's you could have spent some of that money on your nursing care and you didn't.
That's all. They're going to say, hey, it was really nice you did that, but we're not going to pick up the bill for the nursing home right away.
So let's kind of give some facts here a little bit, because I've had clients who say, and they're not, they are nowhere near a nursing home, hopefully. They are within range age-wise in terms of long-term care needs, Harry, but they're not doing badly. They're doing fine. Mm-hmm. And they have some kids, maybe they have a couple of new grandkids and stuff, and they want to help their kids. They want to see their money do things for the people they love during their life.
Right.
And they say, well, I was told I can give $16,000 to, and you know, to whoever. Believe it or not, unless you're planning on having millions and millions of dollars, you can give a lot more than 16 grand per year. There's a reporting requirement that Harry mentioned, but New York does not have a gift tax. It's a federal tax, and it's unified with our estate tax. So unless, you know, basically, if I gave Harry $116,000 instead of $16,000, I don't pay taxes now, I report it, and then when I die, Harry, I can't die with $13 million anymore. I could die with $12,900,000. Yeah, whatever.
Realistically, unless you give away more than about $12.1 million during your lifetime, you will never pay a gift tax until perhaps after you die. In David's example, if there was a $100,000 gift that was given away by mom and dad, okay? First of all, each of them, remember, a married couple can each give $16,000, not just 16 combined. Mom can give 16 and so can dad to the same kid. So that's 32,000. You can subtract that from the 100,000 gifts. That leaves you with a taxable gift of $68,000.
Right? A reportable gift, yeah.
A reportable taxable gift. Now, you file a 709, that's a gift tax, U.S. gift tax return. First of all, mom and dad can split the gift. So they can split the gift, and they each gave $34,000
right.
times two is 68. They each file a return, and they check a box that says, I want to apply this against what's called my unified credit equivalent amount when I die, which currently is about $12 million per person. Okay. So now when mom dies, all right, that $34,000 gift is added back into whatever her estate is at the time. And currently, if her estate is over $12 million, there'd be an estate tax that would have to be paid down the road. So realistically, most people do not need to worry about gift taxes. If you give away the gift, here's the deal. If you gave away $100,000, you are legally required to file a gift tax return,
yep.
But you don't have to write a check.
Correct. And so, you know, you want to help out your kids and they need more than $16,000 of help, do whatever you want, right? That's fine. Don't be motivated because you heard $16,000. If it's really important to you to donate or to give more than that amount per year to your kids or a charity, and that's what you want, don't worry about the taxes. Yeah. However, as Harry alluded to before, there are other things that come up. So why do you want to give it to your kids? Well, because, you know, I'm not using it and I think they could need it, et cetera. Well, how is your health? What are our long-term care prospects? Because if you're not doing so hot, Medicaid will look back 5 years. You know, this look back period, Harry, first of all, Medicaid doesn't take anything, right? They're looking back to see what they could take. They're just going to say you don't qualify or you're penalized. When we do a trust, we kind of start this 5-year clock, but the clock, there is no such clock. If we apply for Medicaid for you, that's when we stop and look backwards 60 months. Okay. So if a transaction happened within those 60 months, Medicaid flags it. Now we got to deal with the consequences of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the next 5 years looks like. I would not have guessed 5 years ago that the last 5 years would have gone this way when it comes to the world.
It's a good thing we can't predict the future, I think.
You know, we've had relatives we have lost in the last 5 years. We've had relatives who have not recovered 100% from a virus we didn't think existed 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So a lot can change, a lot can go downhill. So you got to be super, super careful because you say, oh, my financial advisor said it, or my accountant said I can give my kids 16 grand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fine, and if you want to do it, do it. However, you got to realize there might be consequences down the road, and what I think is super helpful, Harry, is when we do these webinars and we talk, or we do the radio program and we talk about, you know, we saved this person half of their money. We did a rule of halves thing. It's important to know those things exist, because I feel good about telling my clients, if you want to give, give, but don't give it all. And if in the future we have a big long-term care need we didn't expect, well, you know, when we do that rule of halves to save half your money, half the money we're saving will be some of the money you already gave.
You already gave away, yeah.
So, you know, there are these really important concepts, because people think I can't gift. You can. People think I can gift $16,000. Not without consequences.
You can, but they are consequences.
Yeah.
Now, let me point out, there are one or two things I just want to point out to people. With respect to the rule about gifts, there are some exceptions. And one of the major exceptions is, if the person applying for Medicaid has an established pattern of gift giving for the last 5 years or so, then those gifts are not supposed to be counted as uncompensated transfers. So if every time, I have a client who like writes a $1,000 check to each of their kids on the holidays, they give each of their kids like $3,000 toward a wedding, or they give each of their kids $5,000 a year toward their college education. If you have an established pattern of that, that is not supposed to count against you in a Medicaid application. Now, some counties will just routinely disallow the gifts. Then we might have to go to a fair hearing,
right,
which, by the way, David's pretty good at doing. You know, he has a pretty good track record on fair hearings. But so we may have to go to the county and argue before the administrative law judge that these are not supposed to count. So remember that. You know, now you can't give your daughter $1,000 this year and $1,000 next year and $1,000 a year after that, and then give her $100,000 the year you're going to the nursing home. That won't fly.
Right.
The gifts have to be roughly equivalent to previous years and consistent with those things. The other thing I just want to point out, and this is a little more difficult to achieve, there are some cases in New York where a person who was otherwise perfectly healthy, living alone, had no expectation of going into a nursing home. I remember one case, a woman did two things. Her son had lost his job, and she gave him $40,000 or $50,000 to pay off the mortgage on his house, so it didn't go into foreclosure. And I think she paid for a summer trip for her granddaughter to study in Europe for the summer, which was maybe like $10,000 or something. A year later, she had a massive stroke and wound up in a nursing home. And it was argued that these things should not count against her, because at the time it wasn't a transfer in contemplation of applying for Medicaid, because she had no expectation of doing it. There are some lower court cases that approve that. There's nothing very high up in the pecking order of New York State court system that gives us much to hang our hat on, but it certainly is something to argue if you have that kind of a situation in your own family.
Harry, absolutely, and there are, you know, there are literally, you know, fair hearings and things like that where it's been, dad passed away 2 years after paying for his daughter's wedding. When he paid for it, he wasn't expecting to have a massive stroke and then need a nursing home and then pass away. And that gift was exempt. And so, you know, if there's some general ground rules here, if all is well in life and you want a gift, you know, there are some tax considerations and so on, but, you know, do whatever you want to do, I guess. If we're not doing so hot, it's important to realize that there's other things to think about, and it's not just taxes. Taxes are separate from Medicaid. Medicaid is separate from taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another piece of it, Harry, so there, the timing of when you give people money, right? We talk about estate plans. Who gets what when we die? Well, you could also give during your life. There are massive tax consequences to when your kids get money, or when your nephews and nieces receive things from you.
And what you give them.
There's something called a tax basis that everybody has. Like right now, if you're sitting in your home that you bought for, you know, $300,000, subject to capital improvements and so on, your tax basis is $300,000. You sell it because it's a hot real estate market for $500,000. Well, guess what? You made $200,000. There are some exemptions if it's your primary residence, et cetera. We're not going to get into that. But the fact is, you made $200. $500,000 is $200,000 more than three. Real easy, right? If you gave Harry your house because you think so much of Harry. You gave it to him today. And you don't, you just give it to him. You don't retain
sign
any.
Sign the deed. It's just sign the deed.
There you go. Harry owns it as if he bought it for $300,000. If he sells it for $500,000, he will deal with that tax consequence. However, if you say, I like Harry, but I like my house too, I'm going to leave it to him in my will. I'm going to leave it to him in my trust. I'm going to keep a life estate.
Deed it to him and reserve a life estate to me.
Any of those things, Harry gets it in full only when you pass. And because it was a result of your death, he'll end up getting what's called a step up in the tax basis, which means that he owns it as if he bought it for $500,000. And when he sells it for $500,000, he didn't make a penny.
He didn't make a penny. But tax it's also free. Includable in the person's estate who makes the gift. But under current estate tax laws, very few people have to worry about estate taxes.
So, you know, timing matters too. And so when you meet with a client, I know you do this, and I know I do this, and they say, hey, I want to partially revoke my trust to pull out $50,000, or I'd like to start giving some of my money to my kids. I have the nerve, Harry, to say, why? What's the plan? What are we going to do? Because you may hear them say, well, you know, they don't need it, but I want them to start to get things. You may say, well, you know what? It's a lot more valuable if they get it perhaps after you pass.
I tell people that. I do. And very often they will change their mind. I say, you know, if you pull this out and you give this, it could be. It's true not just in real estate. A lot of you people have stocks out there and mutual funds that you bought 30 years ago, you know, for $10 a share, and now it's worth $40 a share. The same thing happens. If you give away any kind of appreciated asset to a person, to a family member, they're going to get stuck with a low-cost basis, and unless they keep it till they die, if they ever sell it, there's going to be long-term capital gains. You're better off if you're making charitable gifts. That's a different situation. If you give a $10 stock that you bought for $10 to a charity and it's worth 40, guess what? You get a charitable contribution deduction of 40. $40, even though you only spent 10. And the charity, of course, can sell the stock tax-free because they're tax-exempt. And, you know, that's a big bonus. We got a call here from Paul up in Burnt Hills. Morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Hey, Paul.
I have a question. When one of the spouses go into the nursing home, they're allowed to keep X amount of money. And then the other spouse is allowed to keep a certain amount of money also?
Yes.
And that's what, like $16,000 and $72,000 in that range? Okay. The question is, if that's all they are allowed to keep, and the person living in the home has taxes to pay and heat and lights and all that, is that $72,000 replenishable, or is that all they can have?
So that's a really, really good question. And so the number's closer to $75,000, $76,000, but it's not important for your question. So there are a whole bunch of assets that are not part of the math. So qualified retirement accounts are not part of that math. And income, if you have income, Social Security, pensions, and distributions from your retirement, they're all part of the math in terms of Medicaid's income rules. But, you know, you could use, obviously, the money you have, the income you're getting to pay your bills. Now, in addition to that, sometimes our clients are doing what's called a spousal refusal. So you have more than $75,000, but, you know, you need it for all these expenses you're talking about. I have a couple pending litigations, Harry, in family court where we've done spousal refusals and the county has said, well, we still want money from the spouse. And in that situation, Paul, my job is to show the true expenses of my client, the spouse, and how they can't afford to contribute because of the National Grid bill, because of the taxes and the insurance. So, you know, it's a very, very good question with an incredibly long answer with lots of buts and maybes, and it depends. But I think it might be time for you to come in to kind of go through the math with you.
You have to separate assets and income. A married couple can keep the house as long as one of you is living in it. And about $90,000 between the two of you, $75,000 for the healthy spouse and $16,000 for the about $91,000 of assets. That's money in the bank or stocks, bonds, whatever. On the income side, the healthy spouse at home, what is it, about the first $36,000 or $38,000 of combined income is exempt.
About.
Okay? Between the person in the nursing home can only have $50 a month, all right? So if you're in the nursing home and your wife, let's say your wife, her income from Social Security and pension is only, let's say it's only $1,800 a month, all right? Well, her income allowance as a living at home spouse in the community is, I forget what it is, about $3,200, $3,400 a month.
Yeah.
So she can take enough of your income, even though you're in the nursing home, and add it to hers. She can take another $1,400 to make up the $3,200 allowance. What David's saying, if her real out-of-pocket expenses to maintain the house and pay her insurance premiums is $4,000 a month, he's going to go into family court and argue that basically the court needs to issue a support order ordering that the wife can take some more money to make sure she's not impoverished, have to sell the house and pay her bills, right? Now, sometimes, it's not a bulletproof argument, but that's the story. And then in addition to the house and the $90,000, you can keep all of your retirement assets, your IRAs, your 401k, your 457b, your qualified annuities. All those assets are also non-countable resources. Now, you may have to give some of the distribution toward the nursing home care, but the bulk of it is not going to have to be spent down on the nursing home.
Okay.
Paul,
very
thanks,
good.
Thanks so much for your phone call.
Well, thank you very much for the answers. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
I'm still a very excited Dave Kubikian.
And David and I are beyond celebrating along with Ben, the solid victory no-hitter of the Mets last evening, are here for the next half hour to answer your questions. We've been talking about gifting and asset transfers, how it affects Medicaid planning, how it affects your tax situation, which is pretty much not at all for most of us.
So gifting is part of the plan. What's the plan? The plan is, estate plan, the basics, Harry. Who's getting my money? When are they getting it? How are they getting it? And the easiest job we have is to listen to our clients say what they want to do with their money. All right, now, date night went wrong. Where does everything go, right? And this is what they say, right? A little bit here, a little bit here. There's this niece I really care for. I want to leave her this and that. Okay. A lot of times people say we want to treat our kids the same. Sometimes they
most
say
most people want to treat everybody equally.
Or they say I do, but I really really helped out my son through some tough times. You mentioned a Medicaid fact pattern where someone their mom helped out during some tough
financial
times.
Sometimes if one of your kids gets sick or loses their job, they may need some help for a couple of months or a year or so until they get back up on their feet. And so, some people treat these things as gifts. Other people say, oh, well, it was a loan. I lent my son $50,000. So the first thing I say is, well, Okay, is there anything in writing that says this is a loan rather than a gift? Because memory fades quickly when mom is not around to remember that it wasn't a gift.
Well, so...
But his sister, yes, his sister it was.
So, case in point, existing client, unfortunately, mom passed, and so I met with son. And the plan is the, you know, the grandkids get X amount, and then everything else goes equally to the three kids.
Sounds like a...
Sounds good.
Sounds equal.
And he said, well, you know, there are these outstanding loans we each have with mom in different amounts. And her plan was to equalize everything. And I spent 5 minutes, Harry. I started sweating. I was nervous because I couldn't find where it said it in the document. And I said, well, there's got to be this amendment. Maybe we did it wrong. Maybe, well, did we miss something? No. No, we didn't even know. We knew there were these loans out there, but the documents, she didn't want to say.
We didn't tell you about it, so it couldn't be incorporated into the documents.
So she had paperwork, and she would, you know, keep track, and it wasn't like, here's a large amount. I mean, it was on the verge of a little ticky-tacky. Here's some money for gas I gave you, and it added to the tab, and you paid me X amount, took it off the tab, but okay. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But one of them has a high five-figure
right.
debt to mom, or does he, right? And so when I said, look, we need, when we terminate this trust, good thing we're avoiding probate, by the way, but when we terminate this trust, I need everyone, including the grandkids, everyone that's getting stuff, getting a percentage, to agree as to how big the pie is, and technically one of mom's assets, technically, is the money owed by this son.
If they sign a promissory note, which they should, to evidence the fact that there is a loan... The note, the promissory note, is an asset of mom's, just like money in the bank. It is, there's $100,000 in the bank. There's a promissory note for $100,000. Mom's estate is $200,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in this case, no, it's mom and the kids. There's no promissory note, Harry. They didn't go to an attorney to write up documents about this loan.
Most people don't.
And the question was, well, is your brother going to be okay with it being impacting his share of the pie? There's plenty of money, but you know he's going to get X amount less because of this thing. And we didn't know the answer to that. So we've since gotten the answer. He's okay with it. Thank goodness. Because the trustee, the person I met with, said, well, could I just, you know, forget about it? I said, well, you have a duty to all of the beneficiaries of this trust to divide all assets as follows, right? You pay some bills, and then you divide by, you know, I'll give you a calculator. So each of these grandkids needs to be okay with what you're doing here because they're all getting less money if you say, oh, there was no loan.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, it won't be an issue because all the siblings agree there were loans and they agree to the math and it's all going
to
work out.
And if the loan stays in, the other thing is, very often, I will do in the estate plan, in the trust, I will make a statement. We'll treat it, it's what's called an advancement, all right? So this kid got a $100,000 loan, which really we're going to treat. If we die and the loan is not paid off,
yeah.
I'll say, you know, during my lifetime, I loaned my son $100,000, all right? To the extent it is unpaid at the time of my death, the unpaid amount is to be treated as an advancement against his inheritance.
Right.
And so when we divvy it up into three shares, that unpaid amount is going to be treated as if he's actually already received it, because guess what? He has.
Exactly.
So he's going to get a little less cash out of the current estate, but that note is going to be allocated toward his share. Or I have a situation right now where the person passed away. He has three children. He loaned each of his children, I don't know, $300,000 or $400,000 to buy a house. Now, this was a very careful, meticulous client. And so he has not only a promissory note, but he has a mortgage on their houses. Okay? So he's the bank. Now, the kids are going to continue to either to pay the mortgage or maybe they'll just pay it off as part of the estate. So the third child who didn't get the benefit of the mortgage is going to be treated just as equally.
Right.
If they continue to pay off the mortgages, he'll get a third of the distributions because he's a one-third beneficiary. So, but these are the things, and let me tell you, folks, these are the things that create havoc, and family feuds after you are gone, because you know what? Your daughter knows darn well you loaned Billy Boy $50,000, okay, to start a new business, and you know, and it collapsed, it failed.
Yep.
All right? And he never paid you back. And now she's going to get the short end of the stick, as they say. So these are things that create problems in families because people don't deal with them. As you say, they rarely document them. And it's important to we want to create harmony and tranquility.
Yep.
The process of administering an estate. You know, we're dealing with the emotional turmoil of the death of a parent. It's usually a parent, maybe a grandparent, occasionally an aunt. But, you know, we're dealing with the emotional of the death of the person. And then all this money stuff comes up and it creates a lot of ill will.
Well, you know, if the plan is, you know what, we're going to help our kids. We're going to give here. But we're not going to keep score. And whatever's left is going to be divided this way. Well, then that's easy. Right. But a lot of times what you actually meant was to treat everyone the same. And you know what? I actually was very nervous. So client has a trust. We did not do the trust. It's a fine trust. OK, there's a house in the trust.
All right.
Husband died. OK, she's got a couple kids. And the questions first started with whether or not she should put money that's in a bank account into the trust or leave her daughter on the account with her. And I explained the normal, well, you know, it's technically her money if her name's on it, but the plan is for her to divvy it up with her siblings. That's easy enough. And she could use it to pay, you know, routine expenses. And you know, there's a lot of enough turmoil and enough confusion when someone passes. It's good to have some liquid cash, pay here, pay there, whatever.
Absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I said, so, you know, like, how much is in that account? And she said, $540,000. I said, then, I mean, if it's technically going to be your daughter's, or maybe she and her brothers will litigate and say, is it a convenience account? Is it not, et cetera? I said, well, more importantly, why isn't that money in the trust? Why is it just sitting there in the bank? And she said, well, I don't like investments. If I could keep it in my house, I'd keep it in my house. And I'd say, and where do you live exactly? No, I'm kidding. So... So, you know, we had a very long conversation about keeping it in a bank, but having the bank be a trust bank account, just to protect it, right?
Put it in the name of the trust.
Right. Now, the reason why I want to bring it up in the gifting context, because her plan is to treat everyone the same, but what we need everyone to understand is your will or your trust only governs the assets in that document or the assets pointing to that document. So, in her fact pattern, the only thing governed by her trust that said everything equal to my kids is the house.
House.
That's right. And $540,000 upon her death, at least initially, will be accessible by her daughter only.
Right. But
that's not her plan.
Perceptively, a joint account, yes. Or if she's the beneficiary on the IRA, or she's the sole beneficiary. I say, oh, I put my daughter on as the beneficiary of my $25,000 life insurance policy, because you know she'll take care of the funeral. She wasn't going to take care of the funeral. Okay.
It might be fine.
It might be fine, and she might do that. On the other hand, she has no legal obligation to do that with the insurance money. It's payable to her.
That's right.
And even if she wants to use it for the funeral, who knows? Her husband might have different ideas.
You can be our next caller by calling 518-476-5900. If you have a question on gifting or how rare it is that the Mets do throw a no-hitter, I'm happy to talk about both.
When when's the last time they threw a no-hitter?
Well,
it was
about a decade ago, but prior to that, they had never done one.
Really? So this is the second one?
It's their second one.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway... one of those things, O'Hare, when you mentioned, you know, because I don't think every single asset needs to have seven names on it if your plan is to leave everything equally to seven people, right? So you got an IRA, right? Leave your daughter as beneficiary of the IRA. You got a CD, you want to put your son on that. They're both $100,000. Great.
Right.
However, they are not worth $100,000 each to those kids because there are tax consequences to inheriting an IRA as opposed to inheriting a bunch of stock. As you were saying.
Yes, because the IRA, if your son on the IRA and your daughter on the bank account, you know, your son's going to wind up paying, 20, 25, 30% of the IRA. Every dollar he takes out of there is subject to ordinary income tax.
That's right.
Whereas the inheritance of the $100,000 bank account has zero tax consequences to your daughter. So And this is the stuff people probably most, for the most part, aren't aware of, don't think about. And so to keep everybody equal, they ought to both be on both accounts. The beneficiary of your IRA should be your son and your daughter, and the others as well. Donna in Watervliet. Hello, Donna.
Hey, Donna. Are we talking? Are we calling about the Mets, or are we calling about estate planning? I just need to know.
Estate planning.
Okay.
Well,
I thought so.
Yeah. Well, I have a question. Earlier this year, a friend of mine left me almost $1 million, mm-hmm. a life insurance. Okay? So I took that money and I gave some of it to my kids, a lot of it to my kids, and I had my house been over and all that stuff. So my question to you, because I wrote out a big check to them, am I going to get in trouble?
Oh, you mean because you didn't file gift tax returns?
Right.
Probably not. You could go back. You could go back and retroactively retroactively and file gift tax returns. I mean, I think the only thing If you did it this year, well, if you gave it away in 2022, the gift tax return isn't due until next April. Okay. So.
How much is the gift tax?
Zero. Zero. If you gave away the whole $1 million, and you filled out the gift tax return correctly, you would have zero taxes to pay. So I would go ahead and do it because that way, I mean, let me say this. I think if you were ever audited and went back, you fill out the late gift tax return, there would still be no gift tax, and they might be able to fine you for filing a late return, which is probably a couple $100. So. But if you made gifts this year, then on or before next April 15th, you should file a gift tax return reflecting those gifts. The gift tax is going to be zero, okay? Because as we said, you could give up to $12 million away to your kids during your lifetime, file gift tax returns, and pay no tax. You don't have to file anything with New York State because New York State repealed its estate tax about 25 or 30 years ago. All right. We used to have a gift tax in New York, but it was repealed years ago back in Mike Erbach was the tax commissioner in those days. Remember?
No.
Erbach Conner World. UHY Partners? They kind of.
No, I don't.
Mike Erbach was, yeah, he was a long time ago. I would go ahead and do it for this year, and then you'll be all set.
Okay.
Thanks so much for your phone call.
I was getting nervous. I'm saying, even though I could pay.
It's just like your income. If you gave away money in 2022, the gift tax return is not due until April of 2023. So you got like a whole year, all right? Because today is April 30th. You got a whole year.
Tomorrow's May Day, everybody.
We talked about May Day.
I know.
Right.
May Day.
Tomorrow's May Day.
It is.
Now, I have to do it for each check I wrote. Is that what
it is? No. You file a single gift tax return, aggregating all of the gifts you made to each during the year. So if, you know.
Hey, Donna, do you have an accountant?
No.
I think it's time you have an accountant to deal with this for you. Honestly, because you don't want to mess this up. This is a lot of money we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, we do that. Yeah, and you know, like the tax services aren't going to be in a position. They don't do things like gifts. I think they do income tax returns. I don't think they do gift tax returns.
I mean, I have a person that does my taxes.
Well, talk to them.
I didn't make all. I didn't have all this money. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, okay. Maybe I'll give you guys a call.
Thanks, right. Donna. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
You know, Harry, when we were talking about the basic estate plan, who's getting what, and we talk about gifting and taking into account, we also have to take into account complicated family situations. So a couple in their mid-50s, a late 50s, I guess, we're starting the conversation about long-term care, but they're doing well. We're not worried about long-term care. Let's just put it that way. They each have kids, grown kids. The kids are doing well. No grandkids yet, but we're planning as if there might be down the road. Mm-hmm. Great. He's got assets. She's got assets. They want to take care of each other. They want to take care of each of their own children. We've met a couple of times. They came in this week, and we used the whiteboard in the room. I'm going to show. I wish I could show everybody else, but it's
wow. It's a lot of stuff on there.
A lot of stuff. So we have different accounts with arrows pointing to different initials for who's going to get what from it. He's got an account he inherited. He'd like that to go to just his kids. He's got an account he didn't inherit. He'd like to treat all four of the kids the same. Wonderful. He's got a trust that they're going to be doing. Some of these assets are going in the trust. Some of these retirements obviously will never go in the trust. But at the end of the day, they want the result to equal these percentages within range. I mean, we're not going to look at how the market did today and recalculate everything. But I said to them,
good thing, because it didn't so good yesterday.
So we could come up with a plan, and we could go based off of a snapshot of today, but we also need to think about the tomorrows. And I said, if you are really painstakingly going to want these percentages to be about right, you got to come in once a year, and we got to take a peek at it. We got to make sure that it still reflects your wishes. And it gets complicated when there are second relationships. It gets complicated because you do want to take care of your spouse for the rest of their life.
This is second marriage?
Second marriage for both.
Okay.
Kids from prior marriages for both. So you want to take care of spouse. You want to take care of kids. You don't want her kids to get the money that your dad worked hard for and vice versa and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You also don't want to have a dinner when no one's talking anymore because of our encounters with them, and we're saying, well, guess what? If something, God forbid, happens to your wife, she could remarry someone or vice versa. Not fun stuff to talk about, by the way, Harry.
No, but it is a frequent occurrence in today's world. There are lots of second marriages and even third marriages. And a lack of thought about the disastrous consequences that can happen in those situations.
I mean, I was thrilled with how complicated the facts are here. The fee is the same old fee. That's not the point, but it got the juices flowing, right? And now we have this board, and we're trying to figure out exactly how I want to draft this trust. Do I have assets that are outside of the trust, Harry, making the trust as the beneficiary, so that at the end of the day, there's just a massive pile of money in this trust? Kind of, because then I could, in my trust, I don't have to say everything goes to this person and that person. I could say my account at this bank goes to this person. I could say my CD at that bank goes to that person. I could say the money that came into this trust from this brokerage account goes to just these two people.
Right. It gets horribly complicated, though, and requires frequent review because, you know, people change accounts all the time. Okay.
Yep.
So what's at this bank this week? Maybe next year it might be at a different bank. Or we might take it out of the bank and put it into an investment company.
Sure.
And so if you're tracking specific assets, I don't like to do that.
Yeah.
I try to discourage people from doing that because, you know, what happens to your, you know, my 100 shares of Twitter stock that I bought, which 5 years from now, I don't know what it's going to be. It could be 1,000 shares of Twitter stock, or it could be, or maybe I would sell the Twitter stock and bought mutual funds instead. The character of assets typically changes over the course of people's lives, even if they don't have a lot of money. They may just move their account from one broker to another because they don't like the person, or they may take it from one bank to another because they're paying a slightly higher rate of interest.
Well, listen, in the future, perhaps, you know, President Musk will make Twitter shares the national currency. Who knows? We'll see.
Anything can happen. I think we're finding that out in this world.
I'm just trying to rile Harry up a little
bit. It's hard to... Okay, then.
So
slightly lost my train of thought there for a minute.
We got a couple minutes here. Let's try to put a cap on this whole gifting thing, because at the heart of it, you don't have a gun to your head. You're doing things because you want to do them, and so you want to know how to do it. How do we get money to the people I want? Does it happen during my life? Well, sure, that could be a gift. Is it a gift of this asset with this tax basis, or is it cash money that doesn't have it's obviously a very easy cash basis there. Mm-hmm. Do we take into account that my kids might pay different taxes? Is this really a loan and not really a gift? Do I want to take it to account when I die and my trust says give everything as follows? I mean, I think that's a huge part of it because you can do whatever you want. And what happens if one of your kids needs a lot more than the other one? That mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they're a bad kid and you're a great parent because you want to take care of them. But do we equalize things later or do we not? And it's up to you. There's no right or wrong answer. You don't have to treat your kids the same financially at the end of the day, as long as, you know.
You don't, and sometimes people don't. Most people do, but I'm finding increasingly folks where in a family, one of the kids, frequently a daughter, is taking care of mom and dad in their old age, doing a lot of errands and things. They sometimes want to give that child a little more than the other two just to compensate for the extra time and things. You can make that gift during your lifetime. You can provide for it in your estate plan and your trust, but... these are the things, what it requires a real open discussion with us, with people like us who are your lawyers, to try to flush out what your goals and objectives are in forming this estate plan. And then, as David says, it's got to be re-reviewed periodically.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's in flux. An estate plan isn't just like one thing and then you put it in the drawer and you forget about it till you die. It doesn't work very well if that's what you do.
And one more big piece. I mean, we could go 3 more hours just on the sentence here, but if I could just have your trust be the thing that gives money and not your will, we make life a lot easier because now we don't have the court involved sticking their nose into who's getting what anymore.
Most of these things in most families do not require court intervention in the distribution process. And the avoidance of that not only accelerates, but cuts down the cost. Sounds like we're out of time.
This is a good show, Harry.
Go Mets.
Let's go Mets. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.